The Marion Finucane Show on RTE Radio 1 with Hyundai, Ireland's fastest growing car brand. Join the Hyundai revolution. The Marion Finucane Show on RTE Radio 1 with Hyundai. Everyone's talking about the revolution driven by Hyundai, Ireland's fastest growing car brand.
Hello there, and a very good morning to you. You're very welcome indeed to the programme this morning on this absolutely beautiful day in this part of the world. And I hope it is wherever you are for the bank holiday weekend. Enjoy, enjoy, as they say. Now, the Irish Independent has on its front page a picture of David Drum in the United States of America. And the headline says, Drum's all smiles. Naturally enough, there's a lot of coverage. Not a huge, not like vast amount, but a fair amount of coverage about the court case this week and who the players were and this, that and the other. Their other story, tensions as Riley faces 530 million health black hole. Health Minister James Riley is heading for a dramatic overspend in his budget of 530 million this year, a confidential government report reveals. There you go. The Irish Times, central bank could do nothing for Anglo. And they have extensive coverage today on all of the players and who were the lead guys, because at that stage nearly all guys in the banks at the time, and how it all led up and what kind of considerations were given and requests made of some banks to help Anglo-Irish, and all of that makes for interesting reading inside. They also have a terrific picture of a man and his dog in Clontarf, a very dramatic one of the dog just leaping into the water. Do not know what he was to fetch, but fetch, I presume he did. Vatican delegation delayed reform, says Martin. Very interesting comments about those people sent over from the Vatican to, as it were, check on the Catholic Church in Ireland. And he kind of thought it was a bad idea, the timing and the briefing and all that kind of thing. Anyway, the Irish Examiner, they have a picture from a place in Nicker in County Limerick, where there was a passion reenactment and a terrific crowd, more than 3,000 people apparently gathered into field to cover it. And it's a very dramatic picture of Christ on the cross there. Their main story, residents in a state don't own driveways over error. Oh my God, can you imagine the legal mess trying to sort that out? Sex attack case settled with cash and meal voucher, and Gorda hailed as a hero after being struck by criminals in a speeding van. Now, the Irish Daily Mail, News Talk will sue RTE over Pat Kenny adverts, and they go on to say a bitter war has erupted between RTE and News Talk over the latest ads for Pat Kenny's show. The Irish Daily Star, get the mole who cost me 6 million. The Sun and a couple of the other papers have the same picture inside, a picture of Sean Fitzpatrick playing golf yesterday, I presume. And some of them expressed surprise and say that he seemed more relaxed than he had of late. I would have thought that an acquittal on all counts would make you fairly relaxed, all right. But anyway, that's on the front page of The Sun. And the Herald have a bomb is left at the Garda's front door. Moving on, as we say, 50 years on, the trio sitting across from me have been in business, and very successfully so, for 50 years. They are Derek Warfield, no, Tommy Byrne. got the wrong one. Sorry.
Good start. Good start.
Formerly. Anyway, it is, of course, the Wolf Tones, and you're very welcome indeed. You've had an amazing career, enormous success. You've been banned. You've been checked over by the cops in Northern Ireland. You've been feted and treated really brilliantly all around the world. You sing rebel songs. You say that's the story of Ireland. How did you take what was happening last week in Britain?
You mean the Queen?
Yeah.
I was just disappointed I wasn't asked. We could have... I mean, relations between our two countries, I have no problem with that. She's the head of state and our president is the head of our state. So it's good to see and have good relations between our two communities
right.
and between our two islands. I have no problem whatsoever.
Because the tone of a lot of your music kind of says that every known evil in the history of Christendom in Ireland came from the Brits.
Well, you know, that's to a certain extent, that's very, very true. Because, you know, we've had a terrible relationship with what was there, the people who governed our country over the centuries. So well, we got freedom and we've had that freedom now to express ourselves. We still have a problem that the whole country is not free. But we're very happy to see that the Irish people and the Irish state can stand up and be proud as a nation across the world.
The you know, when you talk about free, there was a referendum north and south mm-hmm. for the current arrangements and the absolute vast majority of people voted for it. But, I mean, I was just reflecting on all of this before the programme and with all of the court cases that we've had and the banking guarantee and the absolute problems that were created for people all by ourselves.
Correct. Well, that's, I mean, most, well, the problems that Brian was talking about there, the one in the north of Ireland, you can't say that was caused by ourselves. But like the songs we sing don't just cover that aspect of Irish life, but it's a major part in our lifetime. We're of an age where right through the last 30 odd years, 35 years, huge problems arose in the north of Ireland mm-hmm. and they had to be faced. And I think the people in the north had to do what they did, unfortunately, as committing a lot of atrocities and what have you. But I think the end of justify the means, if you want, because there wouldn't be the situation we have today without the interference or without the IRA.
Yes.
Well, without the IRA, I think they were a necessary force at the time. I'm not saying they committed some terrible atrocities, as both sides did. But I think we wouldn't be at the stage we are today. And we have, like people say, from Catholic areas in the north, Ardoyne, Andersonstown, people who never saw the centre. They were only a mile away from the centre of Belfast. And yet in 35 years, they were never in the centre of Belfast. They couldn't leave their own areas.
Right.
Today, thank God, all that's changed. They have a certain amount of freedom. It's not the best answer just yet, but it's the best we can get so far.
Were you in favour of the peace process?
Of course, yes, yeah, sure. yeah. And just to go back to the banking situation, I mean, the banking situation was not alone Ireland's situation. Remember, it started in America.
And well, it started with the subprime, but we managed.
All
Irish people managed to create an unmerciful mess.
I think I wrote a song about it. yeah. And we have a CD of it outside there. It's called Swing a Banker. Now, it's not Swing 'em from the Gallows.
I should most sincerely hope not.
No, but it's Swing 'em in a Merry Dance, because the bankers had Ireland on a merry dance for the past years. And all that kind of mad lending and everything else like that. And, you know, I never got caught up in that, but, you know, a lot of people did. And the bank.
There are a lot of people who are suffering today and having sleepless nights.
Yeah, they were
lending money
like there's no tomorrow. But, you know, that was the banking situation, and you'll hear it in the song if we get a chance to play it, that they had us on this bloody merry dance.
But just getting back to the peace process, Marion, yeah, we were very much behind that. And even the songs that we sing, you know, relate to history of our land. But we feel that we were actually part of the peace process as well, and we promoted it through our songs, and we brought that message right across the world.
How can you say that?
Well,
when it was all kind of anti-Brit, and there was nothing about the
monarchy. No.
There was nothing about the Protestant community, and the Protestant working class suffered as much as the Catholics did.
Well, of course, and I'm glad you made that point, because, I mean, most reporting on what happened in Northern Ireland over the last 30 years was, to me, anyway, very much one-sided. And like the songs we sing, they celebrate all aspects of Irishness, Irish history, the country. And we're very, very, very proud to be Irish. And we've always promoted Ireland through our shows right across America. We have people who have come up to us after the shows and kids who are at college. And they come and they say, you know, there's parts of Ireland and they're studying Irish history. And they've learned so much from just being at a Wolfe Tone show. But you have... like you mentioned about the Queen and that, and I think the big thing was about Martin McGuinness shaking hands with the Queen. And, you know, a person like Martin McGuinness, well, I mean, he worked tirelessly now for the peace process. And he put, if you want to put it bluntly, his life on the line. And he worked also very, very hard in the reconciliation of England and Ireland.
What was it like for you guys playing up there during the Troubles?
It was scary, to say the least. It's something we didn't mention an awful lot down here, because we had to be picked up at the border, taken in cars, sometimes separate cars, brought to a venue, no advertising, no publicity, just taken to a club, you perform, you're brought back to the border, and back down south again. And people say, where were you last night? Oh, we were up in Belfast, or we were up in County Tyrone, or up in... And how'd it go? It went grand, blah, blah. But you didn't mention the scary aspect. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have been chased out of the north.
By whom?
Well, we presume UDA, UVF, on several occasions. But we'd have a car in front and a car behind. And we'd be in the back of a van, disguised behind, one time going from Emmyvale up to County Tyrone. And with haystacks thrown in to block the view in a blacked out van.
I wasn't in that one. But
we went to different cars.
No, just to get back to the Wolf Tones and what we're about. Remember that there's a big, huge Irish emigration population around the world.
Yeah.
And sometimes they're forgotten. And the Wolf Tones carry the story of the emigration story, which is huge. And that's part of our folk tradition and folk song tradition. And it's something that, you know, We've had stories and songs like The Streets of New York, like Dreams of Home, like songs about Australia, songs about emigration to England, My Heart is in Ireland, Irish Eyes are Smiling. All those wonderful, great songs are huge with the Irish population across. Right. We just come back from Australia in January, America in February, March. We've been away from this country like for about 7 weeks. Between January and now, and we played to absolutely massive crowds in Australia, all young kids under 30, and all these kids love,
which in itself is heartbreaking.
All these kids love to get something from Ireland. The Wolf Tones are seen as Irish, where they don't see us as no rebel people or this, that and the other. We are never associated with any political party in our lives.
Ah, come on.
No, never. Never.
Now pull the other one.
If you could prove it, would you ever get me bring it to me?
Yes.
Never. That was never true affiliated association. To any. I've done concerts for Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil, Labour Party, Sinn Féin. You name it. Everybody across the spectrum. Listen, we have been in the singing Irish songs for 50 years.
How did it all start?
We wouldn't be still there. We wouldn't be still there if we weren't doing something right. The story of Ireland is very important to the Irish people, not just the political aspects of it, the emigration aspects, the laughter, the love, the song, the merriment of the Irish people. It's all in our show.
How did we start? Well, Brian and myself, we grew up in the same neighbourhood of Dublin, in around Inchicore, Bluebell area of Dublin. And we were neighbours. And Tommy lived across in a little posher area across near Terranure.
So
he always gets a hard time about that. But we were always, to our families and that, there was always a great tradition of Irish music and Irish song, as there was, I think, in most families back in the 50s and into the 50s, into the 60s and that. And, you know, it was a natural thing, even at the end of a night, if you were out somewhere, you'd go back to somebody's house and it would be family all the time.
Songs.
And everybody bring back their few bottles of Guinness and it'd be a sing song.
Pre-radio, pre-television.
Well, it was a television then.
No,
I don't think it wasn't. But it progressed through that and we had a great interest in Irish music through our families. And that's where we heard all our songs and learned the songs. And even at school, I was at Christian Brothers School in Inchicore. And like they instill a great love of Ireland, and Irish songs.
Yeah, sometimes a very narrow one, but let that be.
Well,
but I'll just continue on that vein because when I was at school, the songs that we learned were Irish songs, but after 1969, 1970, the same Irish songs were now rebel songs. There was never a difference. It was never a rebel song. It was an Irish song.
Yeah, right.
To come back to the thing. How did you? So you two knew one another.
Yes.
And did you guys meet at a flat yole or something?
Elphin in County Roscommon, Easter 1964. I hitched up, and I was doing. You go from bar to bar as you do, and there was a session going on in one of the bars. The boys were playing. I joined in. I sang a few songs with them. And a few months later, I was asked to join the band. So that's how it started.
And what were you doing at that time?
I was working Guinness's. I went into Guinness at 14. I was a messenger boy. And I was there till I was 20. And I left then to join the lads in 1965.
And what did the dad say to that?
Started crying because I was leaving a pensionable job. My father gave me his full backing.
Interesting, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, I knew myself that I'd be able to, if it didn't work out, I would always go on to
do something else.
I knew I was a good worker.
Yeah. Did you enjoy Guinness? I mean, you never hear of anybody being a messenger boy now, I suppose because of email and...
Well, no, I mean, when I was in Guinness's, there was 4,000 odd people working there.
Yeah.
Now there's 250. So if you don't do the computer now, you're no use.
Yeah. And you decided that you were going to give it a lash. Did you have any manager? Did you have any plan?
No, it wasn't planned. We didn't sit down and say, we're going to form a group. We were obviously all interested in the music. We started off by listening. We started playing instruments and so on. And again, as Tommy mentioned, we followed all the Irish festivals and the flag yoles for the weekends. And it more or less evolved. And just to give you an idea of our first break, and people say, to be at the right place at the right time.
Yeah.
We had a great little session in a pub called The Laurels down in Killarney, and they kicked us out at closing time, at that time about 11:30, 11. And we continued the session out on the street outside the pub. And with that, of course, the crowd had gathered around and we were having a great whole night. And then there's this guy stepped forward at the end of the night, and we were looking for some place to stay. And I think he had a kind of a trench. He was dressed differently to everybody else. Anyway.
Right.
And he happened to be a guy from Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, and they were actually filming down in Puck Fair.
Yeah.
And he liked what he heard, as he told us a little later. So he approached us and said, would you come down to Puck Fair tomorrow and sing a few songs in one of the pubs? And we'll pay a few bob. And this was, we had never been paid for singing before. So they actually paid us, was it 25, 24?
It was loads of money.
But we went down and we enjoyed it. And we went down and we spent about 3 days down at Puck Fair with the crew.
Yeah.
And
they brought us all around.
25 quid we got.
They brought us all around Ireland then. Yeah. Like we went to Galway with them.
Yeah. The Brazen Head in Dublin.
We sang again and they filmed that as well. I've been trying to get a copy of that film because, it would have been wonderful to see.
Well, that was more or less the kickoff that got us moving. Okay, well, now there's people looking for us to play at different venues and so on. And that's how it happened rather than a sit-down planned operation.
1964 was an unbelievable year, I think, for the Wolf Tones because it all happened very fast. As I said, we had a record contract. We obtained a manager, Cory Johnson, a Norwegian guy. And we got a record contract with Fontana Records for five albums, and for five albums, a 5-year contract. We fulfilled that, and that was all in just 1 year.
And then I read that you were on the Late Late Show when Gay was starting out in
career. Yeah. We did the Late Late Show there about 2 weeks ago, and the first Late Late Show we did 50 years previous, 1966. We were playing in the Montrose.
64 it was.
Yeah. 64, sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah. 64, yeah. But 50 years ago.
Yeah.
And we were in the Montrose.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
it was 50
yeah.
years between one Late Late and the next. Mm. Quite incredible.
Yes.
And you've done Carnegie Hall. I mean, you've done all the
several
huge venues.
Yeah.
Venues.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I think I always remember Adrian Cronin was the producer there and the Late Late Show. And the Late Late Show was barely a year old. But it was kind of a pre-arranged situation that we were playing the Montrose at the hotel at the time. We were running this very successful ballad session every Friday, Saturday and Sunday there and packed out the capacity every week. But our manager went down to the Late Late Show, met Adrian Cronin, I think it was, who brought us up to the Late Late Show. We sang a couple of songs, I think it was, around the campfire. And it was a set.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was all in 1 year that happened to the Wolf Tones. So it was just like an explosion of things happening.
Yeah, it was extraordinary. As you say, the right place at the right time.
Yeah.
I mean, lady luck matters in these things.
Right.
But then you have to make your own luck as well.
Yeah.
Thereafter.
Well, at that time, around that 64, 65, 66, there were about 800 ballad groups in Dublin alone in 1966. I mean, influenced maybe by the Clancy Brothers, influenced by Bob Dylan and
by the Wolf Tones,
Joan Baez and the Wolf Tones. You know, apparently.
Yeah.
But I mean,
the
it
Dubliners.
Was extraordinary.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like now, 50 years on, well, you probably have a handful of bands who lasted almost the 50 years.
Mm.
So ourselves, we're still going strong, thank God.
And yeah. you got great awards in the States, didn't you?
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah, we have an exhibition.
We have an exhibition of them up in City West now. We're doing a special weekend for the 50th anniversary. And one of the events that's happening is that we have an exhibition of all kinds of memorabilia. And we have the keys of the cities of, I think, about four or five cities across the United States. We have citations from every assembly in the United States, the United States. We have flags that were flown over the Capitol building in our name, each individually for a day. and a wonderful certificate that goes along with it. So, I mean, it's been wonderful. We've been honoured in America, in Australia, in Canada, in England, and in Dublin, we got a civic reception here in 19, you know, for 25th anniversary. So, like, when we started out in a little pub in Scariff back in 1963, we would have never thought we would gone this long and be still as successful.
And do you ever get browned off one another's
yes.
company?
Yeah.
That's definitely. Yeah. I better not say all
you got
a
unanimous.
You know, we're together, Marion, 50 years, which is, you know, it's quite a feat. And just think of being married for 50 years, because I think we spend and have spent more time together, the three of us, than we have with our own families over the 50 years because of all the touring and so on.
Yeah.
So God help our wives. I mean, they were...
it's another extraordinary thing, too. We're all married to the same girl for over the 45, 50 years.
I should hope three different.
It's very unusual in our business, you know, to still be married to the same person, because we're... As we said earlier, we travelled a lot in the early days. Had to be very tough on the wives and families.
Absolutely.
But they stuck with us, thank God. And we're
obviously, we do get on well together. I mean, we wouldn't be sitting here talking to you this morning if we hadn't over 50 years. But we have our differences naturally. I mean, it wouldn't be right if we didn't. And but we're always able to make things up. And but the one thing that never, ever suffered over our 50 years, through all our differences, is the live show. And that's where our main forum is.
When you're travelling, say, I can't remember, there were other musicians I was talking to, but I better not say, in case I've got the wrong one. They don't even sit beside one another on a plane.
Same as ourselves.
Neither do we.
Well, just a little one on that. When we book into hotels, right, and of course, as Brian mentioned, we're just back from Australia and America. So it's one-nighter. So we're in a different city every night, different hotel every night.
Yeah.
And we go to check in, and obviously the first thing we want to do is get to the hotel as quick as we can, get a shower and a meal, and we're on our way. But they always try and put us together on the same floor. We say, no, hold on a minute. And the same with the airlines. They try and sit us together. So we have to say, no, we don't want to sit together. So we do need that little bit of time to ourselves.
Yeah.
You know, we're traveling. If we're on a plane for 7 or 8 hours.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, we do not sit together for 7 or 8 hours on a plane.
Yeah, because, I mean, 7 or 8 hours of chat to the same person year in, year out.
We do have that, like, especially in America, we do long drives. So you'd be sitting in the car for 5, 6, 7 hours. And you run out of things to say. I mean, you just, you know, talk about the weather, but you can't talk about the weather for 6 or 7 hours.
When you started out, was RTE in the GPO at that stage?
Yes,
we worked in the GPO. Yeah.
Well, the radio certainly was, wasn't it?
But Larry Gogan, I remember. We used to regular shows with Larry Gogan in the GPO.
We did a lot of those shows in the O'Connell Hall. Remember, they used to use the O'Connell Hall as well.
Yeah.
And they had a lot of sort of music shows, variety type shows, and ballad shows. We were constantly doing those over the early years, And that was a wonderful experience to be on radio, because it was pre-television. That was the thing to be on radio.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was wonderful.
And I presume that the kind of approaches to sound systems and all that would be completely different now, would they?
What's that?
Sound systems and sound.
Oh, models. Yeah. Sure. Digital has changed everything. The whole world is a new world, a different world. Like it's like,
because you did the same trips as the show bands did, didn't you? Like with Albert Reynolds and those kind of big halls, which you don't associate.
For the first one.
Pardon?
He paid us with a bottle of whiskey for the first show we done.
We were asked if we'd like to play in front of 1,000 people, and through our manager, which was Oliver Barry, I think, at the time. And Oliver was a good friend with Albert Reynolds, and Albert had all the dance halls running, all the Jetlands. So we said, yeah, sure, Oliver set it up for us. So we went down, we sang for about a half hour, I think. But it was a bingo session or something like that. And there was about 1,000 people there had been playing bingo, and they put us up for half an hour. So we did it anyway.
It was an audition,
good publicity. That's what it was. Yeah. But at the end, when we were leaving, Albert came along, and we didn't know if he was going to give us a few bob or not. And he won't mind me saying this, because we've related it to him many a time. He gave us a bottle of whiskey.
Bottle of Lux whiskey, by the way.
A bottle of Lux.
Thanks, Albert.
It was gone before we got home.
Albert didn't drink himself.
Yeah, no. He's an orange juice.
A gentleman.
He was a gentleman.
We did big shows in Kansas City in America, Kansas City, Kansas. And Albert was guest of honour 1 year, and he gave us a very good intro, very good introduction.
Yeah. Was this when he was Taoiseach?
No, he was a minister for...
Yeah, just before he was... Was it before or after?
Before.
It would have been around St. Patrick's Day, so he'd have been over there for...
And also, John Bruton was at... we were down in Missouri, and we were playing this big concert around St. Patrick's time, and he was a guest speaker at the thing, so he was enjoying himself with the work done.
Front row.
Front row. And clapping and up at the table.
What happens on the tour stays on the tour. Is that what they said? That's not what they say. Yeah. Well, listen, congratulations to you. I hope your City West thing.
Yeah, we didn't mention the City West yet, did we?
We did.
We kind of got around it. But just to mention, there's going to be over 3,000 people there over the weekend. And, you know, the size of City West is a huge facility. But there still is room if you want to go, and it's going to be a marvellous. Tonight we have the Symphony Orchestra and the Wolf Tones in a great big Celtic symphony, and that's 29 piece. And that's the first night. All the shows are different. Tomorrow is a request night. We play requests from people who have been sending us emails about requests and this, that and the other. On the Monday night, it's 1916 Remembered, which is the story of 1916. And just to mention, like, some of the requests we got for the request night, one is like the Protestant Men, which, well, remember, the Wolf Tones were one of the first to put Sashby Father War on an album. If you look at one of our early albums, they're all part of Irish folklore and all part of the Irish scene. And we have never neglected any part of Irish folklore. So that is part of the ethos of the Wolf Tones.
Well, listen, thank you all very, very much indeed. And you mentioned, is it the streets of New York? And we'll go out on that.
Great, right.
Okay, thanks a million. And that indeed was the Wolf Tones, Brian Warfield, Noel Nagel and Tommy Byrne. And they've been on the go now for 50 years professionally. And I have to tell you, they don't look it. But anyway, listen, request for the day that's in it. Marion, could you tell me, when does the Lenten fast end? We're having an argument in our house, as I thought it was at midday today. But my husband says it's not until the end of Mass tonight. Well, to tell you the truth, caller, I don't know. I always thought it was like up until midnight tonight. But don't please be guided by me. But we'll see if we can get you the correct answer. Anyway, we take a break now.
1850 715 150.